Here, the old gods are dead.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiya, this is a Creepy Wee Podcast. I'm Rebecca with Liam.
Hi. Oh, sorry. I thought I was like reading my notes.
Every time. It feels like this is like a bit name that you just dame and how you communicate.
It's not a bit. I just like get in my head and I get a little bit nervous at the start of every episode. Stage jitters, you know? Stage jitter. I hardly even know her.
What have you been up to, Liam?
Well, so I finished rewatching Glee. In the library this morning, and I started crying. I was like, oh, well, I might as well watch the last episode, because I got to all the way through to like the last episode, and I was like too tired to keep watching. Mm-hmm. And then in the library, I started crying. When they rededicate the auditorium to Finn, oh.
I knew it would come when you were rewatching Glee. I think this happens like every year. Liam will rewatch Glee and then text me being like, oh, by the way, I'm in bits. And I'm like, what?
No, it's literally like the most emotionally provoking show of all time. I'm watching it ironically, but to an extent I'm not.
You're not watching it ironically at all.
I know, but like I want to like maintain some level of like not a fucking loser. You know? But
no, that stopped when you started a podcast.
You got our asses.
I took myself in with that one too. Speaking of being like emotionally distraught, I can't have any vice in my life. So like I've gave up Julian and then immediately like got sick. Like I think I was like, I had stopped like last Monday, like my last Joe Pod ran out. And like Joe Pods, like they didn't hit the same, like they run out so quick. If anybody doesn't care, these are like disposable vape pods or whatever, and I don't smoke anymore, don't take drugs, I sometimes drink alcohol, but like my only thing was that I had a Juul and it made me happy and I gave it up for no particular reason other than that like it wasn't economically viable anymore. So like what can the Tories stand? Like, can the Tories please give me a fucking break? Because now I'm
Brexit took my Juul pod.
Literally, now I've got like a stuffy nose, a sore throat, and I'm like absolutely inconsolably sad. So like what now?
As you should
I need
be.
To find someone else I to mean, get addicted to now.
Yeah, but like think of it as in like, oh, you have no vices now, now you're better than everybody else. Like you won.
Get a week, I'll be back on my jail. Genuinely, like I'm like,
this is what happened. I'm last like, time you got sick for a week and then started.
Like I mind I stopped for like months and I was like, oh, what's the point? Quittance for losers. And I'm not a fucking
yeah,
loser.
Life is short. You might as well like embrace
I might
it.
As well fill my lungs with fluid and get pneumonia.
Exactly. Oh. Mm,
the world's going to burn up anyway. We're being like really fucking I swear to God, right, like, now. Well, normally I'm quite chirpy, so like and
I mean, I feel great. I think Becca's just having the withdrawal.
I am. I'm like burning up. Like the day when I was at work, I was like, make that talk to me. Like I'm sweating like fuck everything I said.
Oh, speaking of smoking, Dot Cotton Dot.
I know this episode's dedicated to her.
June Brown, if you're listening from beyond the grave.
She will be.
Love you, babe. Yeah, she's one. She's one of No, that hit me hard. I rewatched in memory of her. I rewatched the Lady Gaga June Brown interview on Graham Norton.
She was one of the best guests. That the dynamic that they had, love.
Lady Gaga and old people. It just makes sense. It does, like Tony Bennett, Liza Minnelli, June Brown. She gets it. She's the old person whisperer.
She's like one of the cancer smelling cats. Oh my god, you know why I know that line? It's because of Glee. It's because Sue Sylvester calls Kurt it in Glee.
We came full circle on the intro today. That's so good. Yeah, you've been just segue after segue. Maybe withdrawal is good
yeah,
for you.
Yeah, maybe the anger is like really good for me. It's got me energized.
Passion is passion. Tap into it.
Yeah. I reckon how I'm going to segue into our spooky story that's being sent to us. Like, I genuinely don't know. By the way, this episode is going to be about the Lewis Chessmen. Don't know if we never told
great
we never told anybody what the episode was going to be about at the end of the last episode, because we had not decided, because we were too busy like loving ourselves after that last episode.
Live, laugh, love it.
The last episode that we did was so shit hot. No offense. No offense, other podcasts.
Yeah, you did real good. I was there. I was present. But
you were there. You were crying. And you were there.
It was shit hot, but there was a breakdown.
Like the half an hour that we had to take to go. I thought that was going to happen again today. Like Liam, like I literally just sit on TikTok until Liam's like, "Okay, I'm ready," and he was like, "I'm just going to finish this episode of The Simpsons, and then I'll phone you." And he was like, "Oh wait, my headphones aren't working. Why aren't they working?" And then like I had to take several minutes, and I was like, "Oh, he's going to be in a breakdown again, and I'm going to do this episode by myself. Who can I phone? Who can co-host with me?"
I did cry. I was running around my room like
it's not that deep. Like as I said, like I was sitting at my desk and like I hear like a shit Argos seat that's like maybe 10 years old, maybe older than that. And my arse was just hurting so much that I've moved to my bed to podcast, and he's like actually in tears about headphones and stuff, and I'm like, it's really no that kind of podcast. Like as much as this is a Scottish history podcast, I feel like it's also a pop culture digest like kind of podcast. So it's just
yeah, it's a bit laid
yeah,
back.
Yeah, it's not one of those.
Unless you're me, in which case there's crying and it is one of those.
I say that though, and like I do take my research very seriously, but then when I dissect my research, I'm like writing in bits. Apart from this one, because it's so historical that I like couldn't even make a joke. And it's not even like it's like tense or anything like that. Like nothing bad happens. Like I was able to write content about like children getting murdered, but with Lewis Chessmen, I'm like, that's just no room for jokes. So it's here are the jokes.
Yeah, this one's for the academic girlies among us. I saw Batman this week.
Thoughts and feelings?
I mean, great progression in his career, but also like sometimes the acting is like you would be better just being yourself, like having fun and being yourself would be better than a little bit of like he pushed it a little.
Yeah, Christian Bale was the same, but Christian Bale's kind of like that normally anyway. So
yeah,
I haven't seen it yet, but I just think it's funny that Glasgow City Council have made the whole of Glasgow Gotham for at least two Batman things now. And Gotham, if you haven't ever seen Batman, Gotham's literally such a dark and bleak shithole that's like rife with crime. And I just think it's so funny that Glasgow City Council were like, oh, us, please book us, we are that.
me, please, me.
Imagine Batman attending the old firm.
Oh, the first song on the soundtrack was a Nirvana song. It's that kind of movie, and I really enjoyed it.
What one was it? Can you remember?
I will not disclose it because I think you'll laugh when you hear it.
Okay, I think I'm going to go and see it soon. The thing that I'm booked in for this week, though, is to go to an escape room. So can I, like, run in every time this week because I'm doing that? I'm like, I was like, mate, have you got the bingo? And I was like, no, we should do an escape room.
I would... That's my worst nightmare. They don't appeal to me.
I feel like I've just... Yeah. I feel like this is not the week for me to go to an escape room. Like, mayhaps I'll just buy a jewel on my way. So like I didn't hammer my pals in this. They were like, oh, they've got axe throw in there. I was like, I'm not a dickhead, and if I can be trusted to wield a pack, I'm not going to jail. Anyway,
spooky hole.
Yeah, like literally any way that I can segue this. But I did.
Yeah, I just spooky hole.
I made like the an anal Capricorn. Like, I made a spreadsheet. All the people who sent us stories. So I, like, start, like control F and like typed in beach. So this is what I've got that relates to this episode. This is a spooky story for Kimberly. I quote. When I was younger, we used to take the ferry over to Tyree for our summer holiday. We would spend most of our day on one of the beaches, which was fairly quiet. One day on the beach, there was a huge black dog running about, jumping in the waves and behind rock formations. Me and my siblings tried to chase it and play with it, but it wouldn't get close enough for us to touch it. No one else was on the beach. My dad tried to see if its owner was about, and eventually the dog ran back around a big rock formation and we didn't see it again. We didn't see it on any of our other visits during our stay. On the ferry home, I picked up a book from the little shop all about Scottish ghosts and folklore. Please, if you can find the title of this book, let us know, because we need sources. So she picks up this wee book on Scottish ghosts and folklore, and it was sorted by areas, so she decided to check the places she had been to, and in Tyree, it had one story in the entire book, and it was called The Black Ghost Dog. And this story detailed her experience in the same area, like, basically verbatim. And then she says, I thought a lot about it over the years and tried to find the same book, but have found other informations about encounters on dogs on the island. So other people like came back that sort of like black ghost dogs on Tyree, and she like actually ran into like a mythical beast. How fucking cool is that?
I want what she has.
Yeah. Like, we want experiences like this.
Malevolent.
Like, all we get is fucking haunted. Like, I want to see, like, one cool animal.
I mean, like, we're, like, the Demi Lovato of, like, Scottish podcasting. Like, we're, like, ghost hunting, alien hunting. Like, anything we can do, we'll do. Have you not seen Demi Lovato's TV show where they, like, search for, like, cryptids and aliens and ghosts and
no,
shit?
No, Demi Lovato's X-Files. Like, what the fuck? So since that set the scene, everybody feeling like they're on a really cold beach and on an island, we're going to take a wee break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the Lewis Chessmen.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So me and Liam just had the best break ever, which was like 5 minutes of us just having like the peak of your comedic careers, and I've got to cut the whole thing out. Maybe like one day we'll start releasing the full episodes onto like Patreon or something, so you get to listen to us shit talk.
Except for the ones where it's just us being like crying.
Or like it's deathly, like, deathly silence during the
Yeah, break. It's just like going, okay.
Or just me chilling. Anyway, so let me set the scene for Lewis Chessman. So as we mentioned in our Fan and Isles episode, Lewis is part of the Hebridean Islands, which are off the west coast of Scotland. This area's strategic location attracted the attention of Vikings, who, after settling in the Northern Isles, began to extend their influence down the western seaboard into the Hebrides, Argyll, and then ultimately they went as far as Dublin. After a century of Viking raids and sporadic settlement, the Hebrides came under Norse control in the middle of the 9th century under Ketil Flatnose, who essentially established an independent kingdom of the Isles. 2 centuries later, Norse control of the Hebrides was formalised by the Scottish king Edgar, who gave up the islands to the Norwegian king Magnus III. This was clearly a diplomatic fiction, however, in that Magnus had to conquer the local chiefs in a bloody campaign as described by his bard Bjorn Cripplehand. I fucking love these Viking names.
Yeah, these names are so much more interesting, like Charles II,
aye,
Edward III.
Bjorn Cripplehand is giving. It's giving Scream 2.
Yeah.
Take the stroke. Good shot.
Breathe.
So Bjorn Cripplehand said, described. Right. Bjorn described the bloody campaign as fire spouted from the houses and the king dyed his sword red in blood. In reality, the island's population remained Gaelic under the control of the local kings, who were a mixed Gaelic and Norse background, for another century until the creation of the Lordship of the Isles by Somerled the Great in 1156. He was the progenitor of the Gaelic clan MacDonald, which would maintain its permanent position in western Scotland until the 1745 Jacobite Rising.
Hey, wow, long today.
I know. I think my ancestors come from MacDonald. I think they're like an offshoot of MacDonald. Most people in Scotland actually are. So by the time that the Chessmen were found, Lewis was well on its way to being depopulated because of the Highland clearances.
Not an episode goes by that we can't mention this. It's almost as if it was a fundamental turning point in Scottish history.
Yeah, things like that.
Yeah. This is a Julia Fox stan account area, so if you do not like Julia Fox, please leave.
Yeah, unsubscribe. I take your shit. If the world's against Julia Fox, I am against the world. And the words me, my friends are. So the Lewis Chessmen are a group of 93 distinctive 12th century chess pieces which have been carved to walrus ivory. 93 distinctive pieces, so like I think like 70 odd of them are little figures, and then another like 15 of them are like flat counter type things that are called tablemen. The Horde Ivory Chessmen, which would become known as Lewis Chessmen, were found on a beach in Uig in 1831. That much is a fact, but how they were found and exactly where has been up for debate ever since. With Lewis being a place where folklore and storytelling is no stranger, there's more than one account of the Horde's discovery. According to a well-known story, sometime in the 17th century, a servant of Balin Aquila, who was also known as the Red Gillie, spied a young sailor fleeing his ship with a bundle in his hands up the beach in Uig. which turned out to contain the Lewis chessmen. The Gilly tried making pals with a sailor to get close to him and get his treasure, but he ended up murdering him instead because that must have been easier. And then he buried it for recovery at a later date as he fled the scene. He actually never managed to return to Uig, though, to recover it, and his crime was only uncovered when he confessed it later at the scaffold in Stornoway when he was being hung for other misdemeanors. It said misdemeanors. I was like, is murder a misdemeanor?
Is murder a misdemeanor? I feel like it's a bit more severe than that.
Yeah, I changed that. I was like editing that to crimes.
Like pissing on a church or something may be a misdemeanor. Like you didn't, like not purposefully.
Who among us?
It's a hate crime if you purposely did. but like, I don't know. I feel like that's just crime.
Yeah.
Just say crime.
Just say crime.
It's like when people say gaslight and they just mean lie. Like, just say lie.
So, as exciting as this story is, there's no actually record of it being told prior to the chessmen's discovery in 1831. And there were a few local historians in Lewis who recorded, like, quite a lot of the local lore. The most widely held account of the discovery is that of a Malcolm MacLeod who lived near Uig. He discovered the trove in a small stone kist, which is kind of like a coffin-shaped... It's like slabs that have been like rested up against each other to make kind of like a coffin shape. Apparently he's seen this in a sand dune and then like lifted the lid and then found the pieces inside like wrapped in cloth. He exhibited them briefly in his barn and then sold them on to a Captain Roderick Ryrie. One detail actually states that Malcolm's cow was the one that unearthed the stash, but this is generally discounted as a fabrication. Some accounts also say that MacLeod found them near the ruins of a nunnery in Uig, known as Tín an Cailleach Dua. Cailleach?
Good
anyone?
For you. That was a lot. Oh my god, no way. So, I never even clocked that.
So, Tín an Cailleach Dua essentially means the house of the black women, but it's referring to women who wear black, and it was a nunnery. So it's referring to the colour of their habits. I thought that was kind of cool. So
that's slay.
Cailleach or Cailleach comes for like women, old women, a throwback to a previous episode that we may have done.
Go listen.
After the Isle of Lewis was purchased by Sir James Matheson in 1844, Malcolm MacLeod and his family were actually evicted during the Highland clearances, which transformed this area of Lewis into sheep farms. Ryrie, that captain, exhibited the hoard at a meeting of the Scottish Society of Antiquities on April 11th, 1831. The chessmen were then soon split up, with 10 being purchased by Charles Kirkpatrick Sharp, a Scottish artist and antiquarian, and then the others, 67 chessmen and 14 tablemen, were purchased on behalf of the British Museum in London.
Ooh, this stinks. Throws tomatoes.
Throwing tomatoes. That isn't an anti-English sentiment, by the way. I'm just so against the British Museum, it actually pains me.
Yeah. And I feel like ethically everyone should be.
Yeah.
But, you know, some people are like, they have every right to have that thing. And it's okay.
A bit of a strong opinion. Kirkpatrick Sharp later found another bishop to take his collection up to 11. Kind of similar to, like, if anybody remembers the news story like a few years ago where somebody found a bishop in their drawer, which was worth like nearly £1 million, like just found one of the Lewis chessmen in a drawer.
I was reading that and I was like, I'm like excited when I find like 40 pence in my pocket. I'm like, oh my god, rich. I can almost afford the subway home. But £1 million in your drawer? Bitch.
You can. It was like some like person whose like dad worked at a university and just yoinked it to somewhere.
His name's Percival. I just know it.
Do you?
No offense to anyone called Percival.
So Kirkpatrick Sharp sells his collection to a guy called Lord Lundesborough, and then in 1888 they were sold again, but this time the purchaser was the Society of Antiquities of Scotland, who then donated the pieces to the Royal Scottish Museum in Edinburgh. The 11 of them are now on display in the National Museum of Scotland. So
11 doesn't seem like a lot.
It isn't, compared to like the however fucking many are in London. Anywho, Liam, do you want to tell me a little bit about what these little guys look like, and girls, theys, thems?
Yes, people.
People. Just say people.
Bigot. Becca, you're cancelled. I'm cancelling you. So, like, logically, the next thing to talk about would be, like, where they're from. But to like establish when and where they're from, you actually need to know about the pieces, which is really interesting and in like an art history kind of way. I'm an academic, did anyone know? So like I said, there's like 79 of the chessmen. That includes the one the guy found in his drawer. Among them, there's 8 kings, 8 queens, 16 bishops, 15 knights, 13 rooks, club, another club, no fleet, bus, another club.
I can reference here.
I love listing things because then I just immediately go club, no sleep, another club. And 19 pawns. All of their designs are deeply reflective of the time period and region in which they were made. So like the kings, like all the pieces vary in size, suggesting that these may be from like multiple different incomplete sets, mm-hmm. or like spare parts to be sold for sets, as opposed to being a full set in their own right. Mm-hmm. And the kings themselves are like, they have like a full beard or a clean shaven, but either way they are like, notably, they have like a skinny face, and they're like so intricately designed on these thrones and with like flora and fauna all around them. And they're like always like just staring so like vacantly, mm-hmm. serial killer stare, bulbous eyes with like a sheathed sword on their lap. And I just think they're so cunt. I think all of them are so cunt because the eyes are disturbing. The queens, who I think are like better than the kings in this one because they're so funny looking. They kind of like dictate that it's like a traditional like European chess set, because like this is one of the oldest found chess sets in the world. There are older ones, but usually they're from like Islamic countries, mm-hmm. where instead of like a queen, they have the king's like male advisor, because like in European countries, the queen was like on display,
yeah,
being seen in like a big statement. But in this time in like the Islamic countries, it wasn't so much that dynamic.
Yeah.
It wasn't the same. You can also tell because it's like an actual depiction of people, whereas in like the like older Islamic boards, it's more abstract depictions, so that you're not like falsely like representing the human figure, which I think is like blasphemy or something.
Yeah.
So that place is part of it, but like she is so like macabre looking. Like she looks like Caroline Polachek. And the So Hot You're Hurting My Feelings dance routine. Like, she has her hand on the side of her face and then, like, her other hand under her elbow, and she just looks so, so depressed. I think the purpose of it was to make her look, like, pensive and, like, mm-hmm. thinking about whatever, but she looks so sad. And I like to think that she is sad because in the 12th century in chess, the queen could only move one diagonal square at a time.
What the fuck?
It's not like how she moves now. Mm. Yeah. Whereas it wasn't until I really went in with researching the girl bossification of the queen in chess. Because it wasn't until the 15th century that the queen was able to move in all the directions of the bishop and the rook, like mm-hmm. side to side mm-hmm. and diagonal. Oh my god, hold down, throw down. Miley Cyrus. Zigzag, cross the floor, shuffle, and anyway, it was actually because of Isabella I of Spain, they think, to reflect her political power. They made the queen on the chessboard able to move in different directions and be the most powerful player on the board, effectively.
Love this fact.
Isn't that, that's cunt. Chess is feminism, so put that in your pipe and smoke it. Okay, now without a doubt, the best player on this board is the berserker. So like in the contemporary like standard chess set, you have the rook or castle, which moves up and down, side, shuffle and diagonal. But in the Lewis Chessman set, it's replaced by a berserker, which sort of places again that this is a Norse board, because the berserker is like a Norse folklorish creature of like the berserker tribe, and berserker literally translates to bearskin in ancient like Norse language. And these were people that like worshipped Odin, and the bear hide they wore on their back, like they did some ritual and it gave them like power to be like this completely animalistic, powerful force on the battlefield. Mm-hmm. And they think that this is actually part of what inspired like modern werewolf myths.
Love.
There's so much about this chessboard that is so like culturally significant. I was blown away.
I would just like to say that Berserkers reminded me of the game The Witcher 3. And this is a detail that I have never seen anybody else pick up on online. Is there's a cutscene in The Witcher 3 where there's a mad king and he's sitting on a chessboard in front of him. And the pieces on the board that he's playing on are the Lewis chessmen. And nobody's ever picked up on it, because I can remember I was playing it, and it was the first time I was playing it, was years ago, and I like stopped the game and I was like, Lewis Chessman, The Witcher 3, and none came up. I don't know if anybody on Reddit or anything seen it since, but like the Lewis Chessman, as Liam said, are arguably like the most famous chess pieces in the world, so it would make sense for them to turn up like in media, but that's the only time I've ever seen them actually come up.
Yeah, like the only like cultural thing that usually comes up about them is that they were in, they were like the chessboard Ron plays on in the Harry Potter movies.
Oh.
Like they were also modeled after it. But
not the big one.
I actually, no, the little one. The little, because like the painting, the paint, so basically the original chessboard in the Lewis Chessmen, they, because they're made of either narwhal ivory or like whale tooth, the coating of paint has come off of them. But you, so they're all like cream colored now, but some of them have residue of like a dark red paint on them. And then in Harry Potter, they're actually that colour. The next piece is one of the only pieces that, like, across times and regions is, like, kept relatively consistent, which is the knight, represented by, like, either a horse on its own, like, a person on a horse, or, like, a horse carving with, like, a person carving carved into the horse, which is very cool and abstract. I like it when they do that. But yeah, this set is funny because all of the horse legs are really stubby. But like there's like in Iceland, which again, Nordic region, horses that have been purebred from the 12th century onwards still have these tiny little stubby legs.
Oh, like Shetland ponies. Wait, yeah, hold up.
Exactly, because it was on the trade route. So they're probably some sort of derivative of that because they were pony-sized.
Love.
But I guess Shetland ponies are smaller because they don't really need to be big. I don't know.
Googling the Shetland pony. Googling the little horsey. Aww. Oh, what a banging fringe that horse has got.
Yeah, so there was a photo shoot done by a photographer called Gary Mallon, who is from LA, and he's like a fine art photographer, and he did this photo shoot with Icelandic horses where he had their hair absolutely laid. I don't know if it was actually wigs on the horses or if it was their mane, but they look like Lady Gaga and Beyonce in the Telephone video, and I am obsessed.
Liam sent me a picture earlier of a horse and a wig, and he went, wait, what's he saying?
I said, keep this in mind, we'll stop.
And I was like, okay. I was like, Sarah Jessica Parker.
It does look like her, so I'll allow it. Moving on. The pawns are probably one of the best like indicator of like classism and how class worked in the Romanesque like Nordic countries, because they're the only piece on the board that isn't like an actual figure displaying a person. It's like just an abstract symbol of a person, I guess. So like instead of being a person, they're just like a little, a lot of people describe them as bullet shaped, but I saw one source describe them as tombstone shaped, which I think is way more like poetic, because like it really shows you that like they were faceless, indispensable peasants on the front of the battlefield.
I hate that.
So they were just like sent to die, you know?
And that has remained true since.
Exactly. Every war since. Yeah, we're political on this podcast.
Yeah, I'm actually trying not to be political.
Yeah, neutrality is for losers.
Yeah, if you're neutral, you're on the side of the oppressor.
Oh my god, so true, bestie.
Yeah, I came up with that. Oh my god.
You're so intelligent.
Yeah, no.
You've literally always said
that. I have always said that. I've
never heard it from anyone else.
No.
So, like, the most important figure on the board, though, in terms of, like, the cultural significance of this board, are the bishops. So these are, like, the most indicative of the time period, the most indicative of the board as a whole, because of the bishop's little pointy hat. So the pointy hat, a mitre, up until 1150, bishops wearing these would wear them like side to side, so it kind of looked like little horns, almost, instead of like the dip front and back way. But on this board, they're like a front-facing mitre, so that you know it's placed around the 12th century because it was changed after that.
I fucking love art history.
Me too. I was reading this and I was like, how? Like, who thinks that? Like, who goes to that place immediately? Like, it makes sense, but like...
That's brilliant.
Genius moves. Yeah. So I hear you ask, this board seems to so far be reflecting a battlefield and like a berserker of all things, like actual war. So how did this like fat bishop with a cane and bulbous eyes make it onto the chess set? Well, herein lies how we find out where they could be from and why. Like every other historical event we have discussed on the Creepy Wee Pod, historians fight over where they think the chess set was made. There are two main schools of thought on this one. So, Icelandic people, obviously, because this is like one of the most famous chess sets in the world, are like, oh, it's definitely from Iceland. So, Skálholt in Iceland used to be one of the like biggest sort of like Nordic areas in this era. And there was a very famous carver called Margaret the Ardua, who was famed for her ivory works and was known to be commissioned by like rich bishops in the area. And so they think that because this is actually like the first known board where you can actually see a bishop on the board, because other boards have like war elephants, like this is possibly the first change to the contemporary board. They think that maybe the bishops were like, put me on there. Book me a slot. I want to be on the war front. So that's one theory. But the by far the more like strongly held theory is that they're from Trondheim in Norway. So Trondheim was the ancient capital of Norway. It's like a little bit north, a few hundred miles north of Oslo, I think. And basically they think that perhaps, well, because of the berserkers as well, it's thought like, oh, well, Norse mythology, it would make sense that the board is Norse. It's also thought that like because of where they were found, because Lewis is on the trade route between Trondheim and Dublin in that era, that possibly a ship either wrecked or a guy came off the boat and buried them there for like safekeeping, or like they washed up on their own and then they just were never found again. Because
do you think it's that sailor that got murdered?
I loved your story because I was like, oh, that makes sense. Another theory of as to why people think they were Trondheim, like putting the nail in the coffin, is someone actually took the time and looked at all of the imperfections in some of the pieces, and like the way they're carved and the different shapes and sizes makes it look like at least five people carved all the different figures, but they're not made by one person. So the theory that just Margaret made them. Everyone's called Margaret.
I know. Margaret or Megan. I watched a few documentaries and read some stuff and didn't really get the Icelandic vibe, but I know why you would want to put a claim on that. Speaking of wanting to put a claim on that and have ownership of these pieces, we're going to wrap this up by having a wee discussion where me and Liam are going to create an echo chamber what we think the rightful resting place of these pieces should be. Obviously, as we said earlier, a lot of these pieces are in London, and fair enough, they were purchased by the National Museum in London. But I think me and Liam share the same opinion, where I think that these pieces shouldn't even be in Edinburgh. I think the whole set should be in Lewes.
Yeah, well, this is the thing. The National History Museum is never going to give them up, though, because I was reading so many things, and a lot of them were saying, oh, so much footfall comes here to see the Lewes chessmen. And I'm like, oh.
Have you seen the fucking display they have them in?
Yeah, it's so not good.
It's so underwhelming.
I could do better.
Yeah.
Once again, I could be a better curator of a museum.
I just think that If you Google like Lewis Chessman, you'll see these huge wooden statues that have been carved, and they're on the beaches in Lewis that are shaped like the different pieces of the Lewis chess set. So, like, imagine, like, the effort that they've put into putting stuff outside, like, what they could fashion and create inside their own exhibit, and how much footfall that would bring to the Western Isles. Know that, like, obviously Lewis is a popular destination for, like, hikers and travellers and stuff like that, but it's...
They deserve their own culture.
Yeah, like, it's part of their history. Just... It should be there. And the same goes for every single other stolen item that's in... the National Museum. Like, there's a whole app that you can download on your phone, and if you go to the National Museum in London, you can take a tour, and it tells you where the pieces actually came from and who they were stolen from, whether it be Greece or Egypt or different tribes in Africa and stuff. And I ken that these pieces in the Lewis chess set were purchased, but what benefit are they having to the history of London by being there, or the history of England? There's so many things, like, kind of like the Sutton Hoo. Like, that's such an interesting piece of English history, and it does deserve to be in an English museum.
I get that the whole thing is like, oh, well, it's so great to, like, be able to see all of these things here and then educate people. But at the same time, like, it's not your thing to make profit on, you know?
Have you ever seen that, like, there's a set of, like, pillars that are for Greece, and there's, like, it's in Greece, and it's in this big display of ancient architecture. And there's one pillar missing, and they made a point of leaving the gap because the pillar that's missing is standing alone, looking pretty dull in the National Museum in London. It's the same thing where they, like, if you Google, like, the National Museum in London, Lewis Chessman, you can see the display that they're in. It's like plexi plastic, like, perspex that they're all balancing upon, and it just looks really shit. Like, they're just in the middle of a room, surrounded by loads of other stuff. So, like, it's not like they're taking, like, centerpiece where kind of like they're serving, like, a great importance. I just think that, like,
so many ways you could do the display, like, even on some sort of perspex. So you had some sort of, like, lit chessboard, or, like, some sort of built chessboard sort of, like, appearance underneath the perspex or something. And, like, there's so many more, like, camp fun ways to do it.
The whole thing about, like, museums, and even, like, the History Museum in Edinburgh is also has things for different countries. I just think it dilutes, like, how rich, like, especially England, too, considering that they've got stuff like the Sutton Hoo, and they've got, like, a rich history, like, Romans and Picts as well, like, lived in England, and there's, like, so
much,
there's lots, like,
of Roman artifacts that are actually there.
Tile mosaics and stuff like that could be displayed in the National History Museum. And of course there are, but things for different countries and cultures that have been stolen taking centre place, and it just doesn't really sit well with me. Like, as somebody who's fascinated by history, like, it does leave me an icky taste in my mouth. I've never been to the National Museum in London, and I didn't intend to go. Like, if I want to go and see, like, that was like when I was in the Louvre, and I was like, I was like going around, and I was seeing all this, like, Renaissance art, which is really boring, no gonna lie. I didn't really rate the Louvre. The Mona Lisa was kind of lit though, and then, like, seeing, like, all the, like, the statues and stuff was nice. But if you went to the bottom level of the Louvre in Paris, there's a whole huge section that's just dedicated to Egyptology, and it made me feel sick.
Yeah,
because obviously they're building, like, a really huge Egyptology museum in Egypt at the moment, like, and it's like a huge thing dedicated to, like, all the pharaohs, and it looks amazing. But, like, imagine how much better their collection would be if they had their own fucking stuff.
Yeah, and, like, the stuff is never displayed in, like, an appealing way, and it's sort of as if, because there is no passion behind it, because it is not indigenous history of the area that's displaying it, they have no idea how to present
it. It's not romantic at all. That's like, they have a I can't remember how to pronounce the name of the statues that are from Easter Island, the, like, the heads. You know what I mean? I think they're called Maori or something like that. I'm unsure.
Yeah. Moai or something.
Sorry if we're pronouncing that wrong. But there's one of them in the Louvre as well, and it's just in an empty corridor. Like, it doesn't belong there at all, and you can tell it doesn't belong there because they think, like, they're like, oh, it's so cool, we've got, like, one of the Easter Island statues, let's just plop it in this random...
peacocking. It's literally just peacocking.
Yes. I wonder if one of them's in the National Museum. Anyway.
Probably.
That was our soapbox moment, but we're not the only people who share that opinion. A lot of nationalist politicians and parties do share this opinion that a lot of them are politicians who are actually for the Western Isles and represent the Western Isles, who want the pieces to be returned.
The Western Isles MP in like 2009 or something. Yeah, did not make a ruckus.
2007, a dispute arose. Yeah. Linda Fabiani, who was the Scottish Minister for Europe and External Affairs and Culture, stated that it is unacceptable that only 11 Lewis chessmen rest at the National Museum of Scotland, whilst the other 67, as well as the 14 tablemen, remain in the British Museum in London. These views were quickly dismissed by Margaret Hodge, who was the then UK Minister of the State, Culture, Media and Sport, who wrote, "It's a lot of nonsense, isn't it?" It's just really fucking annoying, especially when it's a politician who doesn't understand the significance of your culture and your history, just to dismiss it really quick and be like, oh, this is a stupid argument to be having. And fair enough, like, I'm sure the Labour Party were pretty run off their feet in 2009, if anybody can remember that. So it might have seemed trivial at the time. But, like, these things, like, you can put up that argument at any moment in time and be like, oh, there's a better time to talk about this. Kind of like when Scottish people, like, and I'm not saying that we should be doing this right now, but when Scottish people ask for independence right now and, like, Westminster are like, oh, no, right now, we're going through, like, all this stuff. And it's like, well, when is going to be a good time? Like, when is going to be a good time to, like, try and, like, reclaim some of your fucking shit?
Yeah. Like...
I mean, these are arguably the most important treasures that Scotland has ever had.
Yeah.
The most important artifacts. Literally. Like, up there with the Stony Destiny, and they probably are a wee bit more important than that in terms of, like, cultural significance.
I even think, like, splitting them between, like, Lewis and even, like, Norway to display them, because obviously it's an important part of, like, Norse history too, if you can figure out where they're actually from, because that would be kind of shit to Iceland. But, like, not England.
They do.
It doesn't even make sense in Edinburgh.
They do travel. They have travelled before for the National Museum in London and made their way to Edinburgh and then went to Uig as well. And the Historical Society in Uig, which operates a museum near the find site, features detailed information about the chessmen, which, even though they kind of claim that they own them, and I don't know if they can even use, like, certain imagery. Like, I'm not sure if these are actually trademarked or not. They shouldn't be. It should be in the public domain. But they say that they kind of claim to own the pieces and would allow the normal museum's market to determine if the original should rest in Edinburgh or in Uig. They didn't care as long as they come back to Scotland in some kind of way, and they welcome short-term loans in the meantime, which is quite humble of them, which is... I mean, mad respect would not be me, and it quite clearly is to me, because I don't know if there's a petition or not to bring these back to Scotland, but I would like to see it. Like, if the Stony Destiny can be back in Scotland and the Scottish Crown Jewels can remain in Edinburgh, then I don't understand why these pieces that are, like... I can't understate how important these are to Scottish history. Like, it literally pisses me off so much that they're not here.
It's because they do generate so much footfall, even though they're displayed so horribly there.
Yeah.
And they're just not going to give it up, because...
Yeah.
Bastards.
Bastards. If you find treasure in Scotland, that it belongs to the Crown immediately.
What?
Yeah. Obviously, I thought, because I googled it, I was like, oh, what happens if you find treasure? I would assume that it would go to, like, a historical society, or, like, for archaeologists to determine, but not, it immediately belongs to the Crown. No matter whose land, who owns the land that you find it on, it belongs to the Crown.
You might as well just keep it and just not say anything.
But aye, if you say any thoughts or feelings about anything we've spoke about today, if you want to tell us that they belong in the National Museum in London, you can go fuck yourself. We really don't care. But if you hate any stories...
Say it if you want, but we won't listen.
Yeah, we actually won't listen. If you hate any stories, scary stories that you want read out on the next episode, please let us ken. The next couple of episodes, Liam's actually going to be away. He's taking a little break for his exams, but I've found...
Working girl, give it a twirl, give it a twirl, give it a twirl.
I've found cover, so I'll be back in a couple of weeks, and I'll be talking about some scary, scary folklore, and then fully in that. It's going to be me and my friend Holly talking about some Fife folk tales. So it's all mapped out. It's going to be fine. We're going to be here. But
well taken care of.
Yeah.
And if she's funnier than me, she she's getting booted. You're not even allowed to be friends with her.
She's been like begging me for a shout out on the podcast, and I was like, no, just come on. she messaged me and she was like, I'll do it. And I was like, no's your chance. But if anybody wants to leave us a rating review, a written review on iTunes really helps. 5 stars or nothing else, 5 stars on Spotify, subscribe, turn on the notification bell, etc, etc. You can follow us.
Download the old episode.
Yeah, re-listen to the old episode. You can share us with your pals. Also, follow us on Instagram at The Creepy Wee Podcast, Twitter at The Creepy Wee Pod. Our website is thecreepywepodcast.co.uk. Thanks. Bye.
What are you waiting for, huh? What are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? Okay, that was good.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.